Did you see my magic word was just okay?
Geronimo? Well, I don't know. Yeah, okay, that's good. Better than Thunderbird,
after all,
I guess.
He is a mentalist, so there's...
I have to think about that.
My magic word is a cocked eyebrow. That's what...
Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. Magicians are creative people, but not always the best at business. We create fun, innovative, clever shows, but often can't find a place where we can perform and share our skills with the public on a regular basis. Most of us would also like to get paid for our time and talents, but our marketing skills only take it so far. Everyone gets business cards printed, most develop a website, many produce and post videos. Some have testimonials and send out newsletters. And a few diligently and aggressively contact potential clients for whom they can perform. Well, it's time to think outside of the square circle and look for an alternative stream of revenue. Rather than waiting for the email to arrive or your mobile phone to ring, it may be time to produce your own magic show. With that in mind, in this podcast, I talk with Eric Dobell and Chris Collins, who have done just that. They join together in developing a full-evening family magic show that combines mentalism and comedy stage magic and currently plays in theaters around North Carolina. They just started their venture this year and have found a key that has led to success. In this podcast, they share their starts and stops, successes and failures, and provide some real-world information that any magician can apply in their market and find opportunities to perform on your own terms. Eric Dobell contacted me via email, suggesting that the Magic Word listeners might be interested in what they have done, what they are doing, and how they did it. I'm always open to your suggestions for upcoming podcasts, so if you have any suggestions, then please be sure to contact me at themagicword@scottwells.com. This podcast is not intended to be a promotional or puff piece to publicize their show. In fact, there is a slim chance that you will be anywhere near their area on the nights they perform. But instead, this is meant to be a way of them sharing their combined knowledge so you can understand their thought processes as they produced, marketed, and sought out venues to perform. All of this and more is up next here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I've got something kind of special here, I think, for all of you guys here this week. I have with me a couple of fellows who have put together their own magic show that they kind of are taking on the road, and it says Eric Dobell and Chris Collins. Hey there, guys.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Just before we got on the air, you were saying that if there was just one person, then you can kind of change your voice. So that way, I kind of like that. That's not a bad idea.
Yes. I'm a master impressionist.
So you do ventriloquism as well. Is that right?
Sure.
Sure, let's go with that. How about that?
He's got to be a master of something, so it might as well be that.
So he must be the comedy magician, and you're then, Chris...
Eric, I'm actually a mentalist.
Mentalist, okay. Oh, so you're a comedy mentalist, is that right?
Comedy magic. Apparently not very well.
So, comedy mentalism, you know, there's something. It's a nice combination. So if it doesn't go right, it's kind of like a clown magician. You know, that's one thing why I don't like clowns doing magic, because, hey, if it doesn't go right, well, it's just supposed to be funny anyhow, you know. So why practice? I'm going to be getting emails from clown magicians, I know. That's not what we do. But
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas at a mentalist, well, what happens, you know, if something goes wrong, if you have a prediction and it's like, oh, wait a minute, I had that thing upside down, as far as being a mentalist, what would you do? I mean, would you turn that into a comedy thing, or just, because a lot of times as a mentalist, you kind of walk out on the edge.
Yeah, well, thankfully with mentalism, I'm at a point now where I don't make a whole lot of mistakes.
Well, let's hope not, yeah.
They're few and far in between, yeah. But, you know, with mentalism, you do have that safety net. I feel you don't have as a magician, where if you're a little wrong or if something goes a little wrong, you have the safety net. But it's funny you mention that, because I was actually telling somebody about this the other day. When I first started doing this, I would do open mics at comedy clubs, and I did a prediction one time at a comedy club and forgot to write the prediction. So we go It was in the early days. So yeah. I get through the whole ordeal. I go through the whole effect. And then I open the envelope and, there's nothing here.
Wow.
But it was a comedy club.
So you can say, well, it was anything that you want. It's kind of like, I guess, Doctor Who. You'd have that psychic paper, whatever they're supposed to see, right?
It's funny you mention that, too. I'm a big fan.
Well, they know what I'm talking about. Those people who do watch Doctor Who know what you and I are talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I, on the other hand, have no idea what you're talking about.
There you go. You represent the majority.
I've been in the car driving between shows with Eric and the other tech guys talking Doctor Who, and I feel like I'm driving alone. I could put my headphones on, no problem. I have no clue what they're talking about.
I think it's kind of a geek thing, so maybe there are more magicians who do get into that. I mean, I certainly do.
I've thought, you know, it'd be a really cool magic wand is a sonic screwdriver.
I've got one. You know, I was in Cardiff, Wales. Yeah. I was kind of get off on a tangent here. I was in England last year doing a tour, and when I was over in Wales and went to Cardiff and went to the Doctor Who experience, it was this huge thing. It was awesome, and I ended up buying several things, but one of them was a sonic screwdriver, and apparently that each of the different doctors, a dozen doctors have had their own special sonic screwdriver. So that's just a different way of selling things. It's kind of like, you know, that's why I think NFL has different jerseys, so that way they can sell a different color the next year or something, you know.
Yeah. This year it's bow ties, next year it's trench coats.
There you go. Yeah, I've got a fez, of course. So
you've got to do like the cups and balls and a fez with your sonic screwdriver as the wand.
You know, that's not a bad idea. And I've actually got some small fezes that they're little monkeys that I bought at a toy store, and they had like four monkeys and and three small fezes for a cups and ball with monkeys involved kind of a thing. But I hadn't thought about doing that with the electronic screwdriver as a magic wand to use those fez. That's a cool idea there, Eric.
Yeah. Every time I see a magician now use a wand, I just think, how much cooler would it be if it was a sonic screwdriver, like the one with the claw on it, the green one?
That's the one I've got.
Yes, that was the 11th one. Oh, my God.
Yeah. However, those who are watching, I said, well, of course that's supposed to happen because it's a sonic screwdriver, you know.
Yeah. It can do anything, but what is it? It can't open wood.
I think that's right. You know,
it has no effect on wood.
That reminds me that a friend of mine, Don Weiberg, up in Chicago, was doing a haunted key using an idea of Barry Richardson, and it was interesting when we were at this flea market together one time, and there was some lady who was selling crystals and quartz and these crystal balls and different kinds of things, and saying they had different kinds of healing powers and whatnot. And he said, really? And so he put this key in his hand, you know, closed his fist, and then held it over one of these pieces of quartz. And then as she was watching intently, you know, he was drawing attention to that, and then slowly the key would turn, you know, in his hand. And then he would open up and hand it out. If you're familiar with the method that Barry has, you know, what he was using. Okay. Yeah. The point is, you know, that it was the quartz, supposedly, that actually was working. And, you know, then he dropped the key and let her look at it, you know, and she just kind of said, yeah, that's what it's supposed to do. It's like, no big deal. Of course so. Of course it's supposed to be like that. It's like, I believe that. I mean, see, that's my point. Anybody passing by, see, look what this thing can do.
I somehow feel like this was my whole 3.5-hour trip to Wilmington tomorrow.
It's like, dude, we got to find a metaphysical store.
Yeah, that's right. You got to go in and just prove my point. Say, yep, that's what it does. You know.
See? You're not crazy.
That's right. Not really. And so then, Chris, you do comedy magic, and you've been doing this for how long?
Professionally, I started in 1994. Mm-hmm. So what is that? 20 years?
Yeah.
Yep, 20 years, I guess. Yeah. I started when I was in third grade, but really after high school is when I really started, you know,
getting serious,
investing my full time into performing. And I actually took about 12 years off. I got married and had kids and really couldn't be on the road the way that I was prior. So I lived in Sioux Falls, South Dakota for 12 years, and I did quite a few corporate events and local events. And then the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years, I really did very little. I moved to High Point, North Carolina, and and had a lot of stuff on my plate. So I really hadn't done any performing over the last 4 or 5 years, and met Eric at a local magic meeting, and we kind of got to talking, and we did a couple of kind of review shows together, and then he had a show in Burlington, which was about an hour away or 45 minutes away, asked me to come over and open for him, and then we kind of started talking about, you know, our styles fit really well, and the way we interact together on stage has gotten really good reviews, and we really should put together a two-man show, and mm-hmm. He came back from Korea and to a couple of unexpected circumstances.
Yes.
Had a bunch of free time on his hand.
Yeah.
And so we decided it was time to kind of put it together, and we actually turned it around. I mean, we've both been performing for a long time, but we built some pieces in the show that were for the two of us. And we turned the show around from the day we started writing the script and creating the website to our first live on stage opening night performance was less than 8 weeks, I believe.
Yeah, it's about two or 3 months. Yeah. We put all this together.
So it was a very quick turnaround, but
not very much sleep.
How did you end up being in High Point, North Carolina? Were you transferred with your job to begin with, or?
I did. My folks, I lived in Vegas until I got married in 1999, and when I got married, my wife had a 3-year-old daughter. And we really didn't want to raise kids in Vegas. Vegas mm-hmm. was a great town. It was wonderful as a bachelor,
but not a family location. Yeah.
There's way too many ways to get in trouble out there.
Yeah.
And my folks lived in Rochester, Minnesota, which is kind of where I spent my high school days. My dad worked for IBM, so we moved all over the country. But we were in and out of Rochester a couple of times, and so I thought we'll move to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. My mom and dad are 3 hours away mm-hmm. in Rochester. They were from that area. They had a lot of relatives, so they'll come over a few times a year. We can go over a few times a year. Kind of like moving home, but not really.
Yeah.
And then my dad got laid off of IBM just a couple of months shy of his 20 years with the company. And then they moved to Sioux Falls and eventually moved to High Point. And I kind of got stuck up there. We went up there to be closer to family and moved into the cold weather, and then they moved south. I got tricked somehow. I'm not really sure how it happened, but I had an opportunity to transfer with my job at the time, which was working for a jewelry store. They were willing to transfer me out here, so we moved out here to be closer to my folks. And
from Las Vegas?
From Sioux Falls.
From Sioux Falls, okay, sorry.
Yep, from Sioux Falls, South Dakota,
mm-hmm.
Which was actually a great area for magic. I was close to Minneapolis. I have a lot of great friends in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and Sioux Falls was a really good hub for me to be able to do stuff. Not full time; there wasn't enough business to stay close to home and do it full time. But it, you know, as a great part time income. You know, I probably did 40 or 45 shows a year when I was up there. So it was, you know, a solid place to do a good part time magic income out of.
Well, that was why I was asking about getting over to High Point, North Carolina. That wouldn't be a high point for me necessarily. I would think in a career move to think I'm going to be going there and really going to make it big in the show business.
No, you're right. It's not. It'd be a high point for you though if you were coming out of Sioux Falls where they get, you know, 12 inches of snow all the time.
Yeah.
High Point seemed pretty good after the worst winter in the history of the time I'd been in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, that darn global warming.
South, so. You know what I like about High Point, and like I said, I've taken some time off, so I haven't been able to do a lot of performing, but I can drive 3 hours, 3.5 hours in any direction and be in the mountains, in the south, at the beach. And so there's a lot of variety for things to do with raising a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I haven't, as I haven't pursued it yet, but I think there's a lot of opportunity for performance in this area. There's some very large cities in a real close radius to where I live. I've got Raleigh, North Carolina to the east and Charlotte to the south. And I think there's some real opportunity,
mm-hmm.
To be cultivated, both in the corporate world as well as doing some kids show stuff, some daycares and libraries. I think it's kind of untapped. There hasn't been a true professional working in this area in a long time.
Yeah, the magic community here is small.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why that I really wanted to kind of talk about this being a small place in High Point, North Carolina, because other people who might be live in different other parts of the world, of whether that it's in Australia to India or Germany or UK or wherever, that they might be, or across the U.S. or Canada, they might be in a small town, but that doesn't mean necessarily that you can't be successful and find some other opportunities. And that's why I really wanted to explore this with you and to kind of hear how that you have turned this, what could be a negative, into a positive by finding those kinds of venues and finding those opportunities where that you can branch out and do something and take magic to the public, as well as, I mean, we all try to explore the corporate market, or some looking into birthday parties. There's always going to be, there will always be opportunities for children's parties, I would think, regardless wherever that you live. But sure. But to take that to the level that you guys have with the show is kind of what I'm going to get into then as well. But before I kind of start to go that direction, still I want to go back then over to Eric just a minute to kind of get a little bit more about your background as far as how that you had ended up in High Point and your interest in mentalism.
Sure. Well, I ended up in High Point because I was married.
Okay. And she drug you there. Okay.
That's one way of putting it.
Or maybe
it.
She drugged you and then you got there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we moved around a lot. I've actually been performing for a little over 10 years now. And she had a corporate job, and we moved around a couple times because of her job. When we moved to North Carolina, things kind of fell apart, and, you know, I liked it here. To be frank, mm-hmm. You know, I really enjoy the area. As far as the mentalism goes, so, you know, I ended up here in High Point actually by chance, and I'm staying with Chris right now working on this show. As far as the mentalism goes, I got into that I was probably about 18 or 19 years old. I saw my first magician, and he was a guy selling tricks from a kiosk in a mall in Ithaca, New York. Mm-hmm. Bought a couple things, and I just fell in love with magic. And then from there, I very quickly segued into mentalism, which I think is what really interested me about magic initially. I just didn't know what it was or what it was called, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, there was something about the mystery of it, it sounds like, that kind of enchanted you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, ever since I was very young, I've been fascinated with Sherlock Holmes and Batman and these people that...
Use deductive reasoning.
Exactly. And I wanted to be able to do that. And when I got a little older, I realized that, you know, maybe you can't quite do it like it's done in the stories.
Yeah.
And people get a little upset when you try, by the way.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience.
Yeah, maybe.
One of these days he's going to be good at it.
Yeah. You know what they say about assuming.
Yes, I do.
But yeah, then when I got into mentalism, that actually happened. There was this great magic shop in Ohio. Guy's name was Bucky. I'm afraid I actually don't remember the name of the shop right now, but maybe I can look it up later if you want to know. His name was Bucky, and he had all these books, and I asked him about mentalism, and he sold me Mind, Myth, and Magic, the T.A. Waters book.
T.A. Waters, sure.
Yeah, read it the first time, didn't understand any of it, but I knew from the essays and the descriptions of what I could gather from it, this is what I want to do, and this is also what I think Sherlock Holmes would be doing if he was real. He would be using these types of techniques. And then it just snowballed from there.
I'm surprised that he steered you in that direction. I mean, the first one I would think of, almost like a tar bell course for magicians, would be Corinda's 13 Steps to get people interested in magic or mentalism.
That's what he should have.
In hindsight, huh?
Maybe he didn't have it.
Yeah, there's an old adage in sales, you sell what you got.
Well, that's why I always tell people when they're like, that's what's nice about mentalism. Magic, I think, is a little wonky with people that want to get into it. It's a little tricky what to get into first. Like, Tar Bell is really a great beginner's course, but it's a big investment because there's so many of the books. Mentalism's a little easier. You read the 13 Steps, you read T.A. Waters, you read Psychological Subtleties. Everything else is gravy.
Mm-hmm. Those are some basics.
So, yeah, he's yeah, that's you learn the basics then.
The difference, I think, is the problem sometimes that people have with mentalism that don't get into that is that it requires some scripting, much like you guys are doing for your show.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a moment also. But the fact is that if somebody buys a magic trick, they think they can put it in their show tonight, and sometimes people do. Once they learn the secret. So basically you're just kind of a demonstrator at someone's party to show this newest trick you just bought, you know, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas with mentalism, like with Kenton Nepper's Wonder Words, cards and all kinds of things. You know, of course, Manichek's subtleties and the way you're handling an audience, that there are so many things that go into making mentalism look and sound real, you know, as opposed to magic, that people say, oh, that's kind of bubblegum for the eyes. That's fun. But when you're reaching inside someone's mind and you do it properly, then that's a whole different level.
You really have to give it a lot of thought. Yeah, you can't, excuse me, you can't just bumble through it like some people may do with a new magic trick. It doesn't work quite as, it doesn't work quite as well, period. It really doesn't work with mentalism. So yeah.
So you guys were saying that there is not really a large magic community in and around where you live then right now, but you guys came together how again?
There was a small, there was a couple of entertainers that actually I met, the company that I worked for had hired them for one of our customer appreciation events, and he had a group of 8 or 10 people that got together on a regular basis. That he had invited me to, and to be honest, as much as I enjoyed the time there with them, the one person, well, two people out of that group that I really enjoyed spending time with was Eric and another gentleman named Shannon, and so you know we kind of gravitated towards each other. I think we both had a true love for the art, but more importantly than having a love for the art was we had a love for entertainment. And we both understood each other that magic and mentalism and entertaining, it's not about the tricks. It's about the entertainment. And where you can sit in a magic club around in a circle and you can do all these great sleights and great effects that you're never going to show the lay audience because the lay audience wouldn't get it. And even if they did, they wouldn't care. Our styles really led to, you know, well, why do you do it that way? I do it this way because it gives me the biggest bang for the buck when it comes to an effect for a lay audience. And I had a gentleman many, many, many years ago that told me, you know, you can do all the great magic in the world, but if you don't do the stuff that's entertaining, it doesn't matter. Magicians don't pay you to perform for them. If you're going to do this and make a living at it, you need to look at, is this trick entertaining? Is this going to keep an audience held in the palm of your hand? And if it's not, then it's great to learn and it's wonderful for you to have those skills, but that's really no more useful than sitting in a room with 5 magicians and showing it to them. And we all have them. I've got a ton of effects that I never do for a lay audience. That I only do for magician friends. But you know, my show and the stuff that Eric and I have worked together in the show is all, you know, punch you in the face magic that's entertaining or mentalism that's entertaining. You know, we want those people to leave really feeling like the show was cohesive and they saw some amazing magic, but it was the entertainment that kept their attention.
Right. Sounds like Carol Fox, for an example. That Carol would talk about the things, and I've heard his lectures years ago. They were things that were very straightforward. You were looking at the bottom line entertainment, the bang for the buck. What did the audience perceive? What did they see in the show? And you don't have to necessarily buy a lot of props. It's something that you can make and something that is very straightforward. And so you should be looking to the easiest method and not necessarily the most difficult knuckle-busting method. That's great for magicians, for them to appreciate if they think they're using something else. And a lot of times you can fool a magician just using those simple methods because they're thinking, okay, well, he's using this method or that or whatever. And really you're using something that is so much more simple than what they might expect. And as far as making money, you're exactly right then, Chris, that there are not many magicians who are going to be making a living performing at conventions or lectures or selling magic to other magicians. That might be something that would supplement their income, but you're really going to be making that from actually performing for real people who are paying you the real salaries or the real fees for that. And so in developing your show, that, again, you guys kind of came together and found that you have a good match with each other's character, and certainly, you know, one can play off the other one, and I think that you can have some peaks and valleys. Well, I would say peaks and valleys. You have some peaks and plateaus, I guess, where that you might have something that is going to be funny, and then you let people rest for a while, and then you might have another surprise or something where it's going to be back and forth, and then you kind of mesh your character together and script so that sometimes you're doing things, I assume, together and sometimes independently. Is that correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, you do want to Well, I remember Eugene Berger used to talk about that. It was some country singer he would talk about, like Patsy Cline or something. You go to one of those shows, and she would sing all sorts of songs about all sorts of different types of things. Mm-hmm. You know, magic should be the same kind of way. I mean, it's a show and should conjure up different types of emotions. So, yeah, we have comedy mixed in with a little bit of drama and all sorts of different things in there. Yeah, that's very important.
I agree. You know, if you go to hear, let's say, particularly Irish music, Celtic music of some sort, that's like every other song is completely different. I say different. That first it's going to be a slower song, and the next one's going to be a jig, and then after that it's going to be a slow song, and then a jig. You know, they just you can't have like 20 songs that are in a row that are all slow or that are all jigs. You kind of have to have the you know, the swings of emotion, I guess. And in so doing that, do you then, Eric, provide the more somber or serious types of moments with mentalism?
We actually both do it. You know, there's parts of my show that are funny, not as funny as Chris's, because, you know, mind reading is a little different from that. Mm-hmm. But we,
no, that's funny. He prances. It's pretty funny.
I do prance.
Oh, a brony, huh? Okay.
That makes more sense if you've seen me.
Okay.
But yeah, we both provide that. We both do bits that are funny. We both add bits that are a little more dramatic and self-revealing. It goes back and forth. Neither one of us is
I think it's what made us a really good match is in both of our individual shows, we're both capable of taking the audience on a great roller coaster ride of high comedy and true, you know, heartfelt stories that back the magic. And I think that's really a tale of a good performer. I mean, you really want to leave that audience not just thinking, wow, that guy was hilarious, but there was something in the show that touched me on a personal level.
Right.
And both of us had that in our personal shows. And so it was a matter of looking at everything that we had that we did and putting the pieces together to create a really well-rounded, well-scripted dual act. And you don't see a lot. There's not a lot of
no.
There's a lot of dual acts, but there's not a lot of mentalists matched up with a magician that really, really works. In fact, I can't think of any other true, you've got some dual magic acts that do some mental magic, but I don't think there's another act out there that's a mentalist and a magician together in the same show that isn't a review style show.
Mm-hmm.
That's a true, you know, truly scripted show. And luckily for me, Eric's not afraid to do goofy things. I mean, we've got some bits and pieces in the show where he pops out or makes a cameo appearance doing something that's very funny, that you wouldn't expect a serious mentalist to do. And he's not afraid to wear that hat.
Mm-hmm.
So it really gives us the opportunity to do some things that you maybe wouldn't see otherwise.
Well, what I think is kind of cool also is the fact that you guys have actually made your own market. You have taken the skills that both of you have, putting them together and making something that is synergistically larger than the sum of its parts, certainly. But then also being able to take that to the public and being able to sell that. And so I wanted to explore that a bit about how that you found the venues that you do.
Yes, the venues. We're still learning about the venues.
Yes. There's a lot to learn about this.
We've learned a lot.
Sure.
Chris, I think, was primarily the one who did a lot of the calling to the venues and the negotiating. And one of the major things that we've learned is that when you're a smaller style act with no name recognition, you have to work with theaters that work with you, which are most often the theaters that do split deals. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
It's very easy for a performer to go in and four-wall a theater, but if you do that and you don't have the support of the theater staff, it's devastatingly
it makes it much more difficult.
Very devastatingly difficult to be successful.
What you want to ask when you contact these theaters, they don't have to do a split deal with you, but we just find that a lot of the ones that do that sort of agreement tend to be the ones that do all these things.
So they have a vested interest.
But yeah, you want the theater to care. You want to be on the theater's website. You want to be able to put posters up in their theater. you want to be included in the curtain speech and the email blast. And this all sounds like really basic stuff, but I found that a lot of the theaters don't provide it. And if somebody is, if somebody sees our ad or our poster or whatever, and then goes to the website to buy tickets and can't find us, or goes to the theater to find tickets, and there's no sign anywhere that we're actually going to be at the theater because they don't do that, mm-hmm. then that reverses any sort of advertising we do. So you have to work with theaters that will work with you also.
You know, I think unless you've got a name. Unless you have what?
Unless you got a name.
Yeah, if you have a celebrated name that people are going to come, let's say, for example, currently Matt Franco having won America's Got Talent. Exactly. I think that he could get booked. But someone like you or me who are not as well known, by any means, that's just going to be a little bit more difficult. I like the idea of the buy-in with the theater then as well, because they will, you know, use their email, you know, everything else that they have at their disposal to try to encourage people to buy tickets. Yeah. And with that, they're going to be having, you know, maybe hundreds or thousands of potential ticket purchasers, you know, that can come in. They can try to help put butts in the seats then as well.
The other thing that's really important with the theaters, and you've got to be careful. I mean, we ended up settling on, I believe, 13 or 14 theaters that we took the show to.
Something like that.
I believe it was 13. But we probably, I probably talked to 80, with a set of dates. I mean, we didn't go into this saying we just want to book shows. We went in and saying we have this Friday and this Saturday over this period of, and had a very specific schedule. And we talked to a lot of theaters that so we'd be interested. What, you know, how about next February or next March? And I said, no, this on this tour, these are the dates that we have. And I actually had one theater go, well, what, are you retiring after that? I said, no, sir, we're not. But right now, this is the tour schedule that we're trying to fill, and we'd love to come to your theater, but only if it fits into this schedule. And so we obviously passed on that one. But one of the things that by finding a theater that's willing to do ideally for us, we found split door deals work the best. But they also have a ton of media contacts. And while they'll share those media contacts with you, if you ask for them, to get those theaters to call the radio station or to call the TV station, we got some media coverage that we would have never received on our own. Two no-name magicians sending a press release out to a big TV station in High Point wouldn't have seen the light of day. Would never have hit a producer's desk.
Yeah.
But the marketing gal at the theater that had a personal relationship with that TV station that sent that morning producer an email and said, hey, we're bringing this great magic show in. Do you have some time available on your morning show? It probably sold an additional 50 or 60 tickets.
And yeah, and actually the woman who worked at the TV station asked for us. Like nobody sold us to her. She saw the email blast and asked for us. Like he was saying, I mean, we had the endorsement of the theater. If you have the endorsement of the theater, that automatically creates legitimacy.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that you have to, use all of the opportunities that are at your fingertips, and sometimes those are things that are not intuitive, that some people trying to put together their own show may not necessarily think of. And I think that's important, that in some cases I would think that theaters may have those contacts but fail to tell you about them. And so when someone is going to research and talk to these different theaters, of saying, by the way, in addition to sending out the announcements, you might have to talk with them and say, what kind of information can I provide you to make a poster, you know, or what kind of promotional campaign are you going to be having to advertise about this? And are there television and radio type of interviews that and newspapers that you'd like for us to talk to? And if they don't follow up, that, you know, even if they just send a notice, a press release out, and then you can follow up with that saying, hey, I'm following up just, you know, the 3 days ago that so-and-so sent out this press release. I'm following up to see if I can set an appointment to come in and talk with you.
Yeah, I think the one thing we did with this show, and we did this from the onset, we sat down and my wife and kids were out of town visiting her folks, and Eric had just come back from Korea, and we locked ourselves in the house for 7 or 8 days and did nothing but focus on this show. And one of the key things for us was it had to be a package. And as we talked to theaters and booked theaters, we heard that time and time again. You got our attention because you had a package, your website, your press release, your posters, there was a branding that went through the whole thing. So the first thing we did was pick a name, Impossibilities. And then we said, okay, what is that? Well, for us, with our performance style, it's an intimate evening of magic, mind reading, and mayhem. So that was the logo and the name, and we created a logo around it. And then we created a look for that, and we followed it through the press release, the website, the rack cards, the posters. We didn't call the theater and say, what do you need from us to create a poster? We said, here's the poster. We sent it in a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
You print them out if you want to, you know, put them up. We're going to print out. We printed out several hundred posters for each location. We discovered and decided early on we weren't going to sell this show by buying radio spots or buying newspaper ads or buying TV ads. Not that we wouldn't love to be on a billboard or be on TV or be in the mm-hmm. newspaper, but A, we couldn't afford it, and B, I don't think it would have done a lot for us. Nobody knows who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So our whole marketing scheme really had to be guerrilla-style marketing of getting out, shaking hands, putting up posters. We've done some buy one, get one free tickets for larger theaters where, you know, we ended up booking some theaters that are 1,000 or 1,100 seats, knowing we were never going to sell 1,100 seats. But we thought, you know, if we do a buy one, get one free ticket and we sell 300 of those and we end up with 600 people in the theater's going to look full. As opposed to doing a show for 150 people in a 1,100 seat theater.
Now, as far as the ads on the posters, let me back up there for just a second, then, Chris. Are these things that came out of your pocket, or were they co-op type of things that the theater partially paid for, or did you have another sponsor that helped pay for the posters?
It was co-op with me and Chris.
Yeah.
Okay.
We covered all the costs.
We provided that for the theaters, and some of the theaters did print some posters on their own, but for the most part, we covered the posters.
And what we found, we were able to negotiate better split deals because we were willing to do that.
Yeah.
So where a theater might typically go, yeah, we'll do a split door 50-50, we were able to say, look, you know, we want you to do an email blast, which isn't going to cost you anything. We want you to put us in your curtain speeches, which isn't going to cost you anything. And in exchange, we'll do all the posters. We'll do the press releases. We did these really nice rack cards like you would see in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got very clever. We had 14 cities. So we printed rack cards, and we printed, I think, 10,000 rack cards, and we left them with a small blank area at the bottom, and we ran every one of those rack cards through an inkjet printer and personalized, you know, 400 for this location and 500 for that location. But the bulk of the printing, we got this really nice full-color two-sided rack card, and because we ordered 10,000 of them, we got a really good deal on it. I think we paid $280 for 10,000 rack cards.
Where was the who was the printer?
I actually used an online company. I'm lucky enough to do a lot of desktop publishing and marketing myself, so I designed everything,
mm-hmm.
and we used an online company called Got Print. Got Print, like Got Milk, gotprint.net. I've used them for years. Even when I was in the nightclub and bar business, they did all of my promotional postcards and things that we would do on a weekly basis. They are, if you're not familiar with them, I definitely suggest your listeners go out and check them out. It's amazing. I think you can do, if I recall right, when I did my last brochure, I did a half fold 8.5 by 11 brochure, full color, UV coated, glossy on both sides, folded, came to me ready to go. I think I did 1,000 pieces for $116 plus a little shipping.
Hmm. Well, not everybody has the same ability artistically that you do in order to design that. And so,
yeah.
Would you have outsourced that if you?
You have to.
You have to. If you're not able to do it yourself, you've got to find somebody to do that for you.
And set up a website and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. I am a firm believer. And Eric will attest to this. I told Eric probably when we first met, he was working on a website. I said, man, you got to do your website yourself. Don't hire a web guy to do your website. Oh, Chris, I don't understand it. I can't do it. I use a company called Weebly, Weebly.com. Mm-hmm. They'll let you set up one site on their hosting service for free. You can buy a domain at GoDaddy and point it to it at no cost. Their interface is incredibly easy to use. Their blogging interface is incredibly easy to use. And then if you choose to buy into their program, I think I host 8 sites on Weebly, and I think I spend about $40 a quarter.
Hmm.
And their interfaces have been built in a way that even somebody with almost zero graphic knowledge or ability, if you have your logo and you have some pictures and you can type in a word processor, you can put up a site that looks fantastic.
Now, when you've
got hundreds of templates and they're all editable, so you can change the backgrounds or change the colors and make them your own.
And when you were talking with the theaters, to back up just a moment here, Chris, that I assume you were talking about a year in advance.
No, we put this show together. We started working on this in the I believe the 17th of June. Mm-hmm. And we did our first performance on the 22nd of August.
And so you had the calendar already identified as we're going to be wanting to do a show on this date, and this date. And then you went to
different theaters. Yeah, we gave ourselves a deadline.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. In June when we started working, we kept calling theaters until we found enough of them that would work with us and on the dates that we had available. And we didn't fill every date. There was a few weekends that just didn't work out. We just couldn't find a theater that was available or met our criteria. We talked to a lot of theaters that we decided, you know what, this isn't the right space or mm-hmm. the right town, and it wasn't worth it to us to pick a theater just to do a show if we didn't think it was going to be successful. And cross our fingers, so far we're 6 dates into our run, and I can honestly say at this point we have not lost a dime. There's not been one show that we've had that we have lost money on. We haven't made money, a bunch of money on every one of them, but we haven't lost anything on any of them.
But is it something that you think you're going to be carrying on then in the future, or have a completely different show or take on the road?
That's what's nice about this, too. After the run is over, we will have a show and a website and promotional material, videos of us on news stations. We're going to have all this stuff, testimonials that we can use for our individual shows, but also for this show. There was a couple of theater directors that have talked to us about bringing this show to corporate markets and colleges because it's a nice little package and you get two types of entertainers. So there's a possibility we might be able to go into that, but if that doesn't pan out, there's still theaters. We'll have a show that we can just call a theater, book the theater, and then just go drive there and do the show. And we can move outside of the state of North Carolina. Right now we're just doing it regionally, but after this run is all over, we will have the freedom in the show to go wherever we want.
Well, that leads me to how compact the show is then as well, as far as what you are bringing into the theater. Obviously they got the sound of the lights and everything there, but, and then the curtains, but how much equipment are you bringing? I mean, you're not doing a big furniture.
This provides a lot of the sound and light.
That's one of the other things we discovered with small regional theaters. Now, there are some larger theaters that we're going into that we're utilizing the sound and light that the theater has.
Mm-hmm.
However, my background, not just in magic, but I've owned a production company for 15 years that did wedding production and DJ, so I had a lot of compact equipment that is really high-end equipment. So part of our sell to some of these smaller theaters was, hey, let's do a split, but let's do a 25-75 split. Instead of 50-50, as the performers, we're going to get 75%. You're going to get 25, but you don't need to do anything. I don't need any staff there other than your house manager and your box office. I'll bring all my sound, all my lights, all the set pieces. We travel, oddly enough, I own a Kia Sorento, which is a 6-cylinder mid-size SUV. We tow a 6x12 enclosed trailer, and we have the ability to bring in and set up the stage in a hotel ballroom, if that's what we chose to do. Full curtains.
Or a big stage. Well, yep. We did, High Point is like 1,100 seats?
Yeah, High Point was 1,100 seats.
We can make it big or small, whatever the venue size is.
But we've brought all of the staging and set pieces and backdrops, support structures, stands, all ourselves. And for us with the smaller regional theaters, that was really the selling factor for getting them to do a split with us, is they had no risk. They had very little, labor involved in allowing us to come into the theater. So their level of risk with a small regional no-name act was very little because we were bringing everything with us. Now, it took on some additional costs on our end. You know, we bring 3 tech guys with us. We walked into the High Point Theater, and they couldn't believe that we had 3 tech guys with us. We figured that out, or we worked that out by offering these guys a certain amount per ticket that's sold. and we went to the college and went to the theater department and found theater kids that are in school to learn technical theater, and they are ecstatic to be joining us and being out on a touring show, and they really could care less what they're getting paid, but the fact that they're making something per ticket is great. The other side of that is they do a ton of help with social media because they benefit from every additional person that comes to the show. So you've got another three people that are out there actively promoting the show on your behalf. And they're making, you know, anywhere 50 cents a ticket, you know, is what we're paying them. So it's not costing us a lot of money to have that support.
They're interns that would be doing it for free anyways, because they're getting it for their resume, or they have to do it for school. But they're also getting paid for it, because that's
what I was going to suggest. My son Nick had done that for a while with Brian Brushwood and had toured with him and had received college credit, and so he got to travel around. He was studying recreation, parks, and tourism services, and as a result, it made sense certainly that he was able then to, you know, get college credit. But he didn't have to. Brian wasn't paying him anything, and it was kind of a win-win for everybody. So, you know, the fact that you're giving somebody some cash on there, that is just tremendous. But I don't think even it would be necessary, because just as you said, that they would be willing to do that just for the college credit.
Yeah, it's important to me that they get sort of.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the things, you know, that they had back of the room sales that Nick was helping with, and so he got a share of that. That's kind of how. That he was paid, you know, from that. So that's something you might think of.
We do that with one of the crew, yeah.
Yeah, we do that as well. My daughter travels with us, and she's paid on commissions from back of the room sales, T-shirts and magic kits and headshots, DVDs, and all of that stuff is all branded and logoed with not our personal names, but the show name. That for us was really the important part. We wanted this to be a package. We actually went as far as creating like a red carpet style backdrop where you see kind of the. They call it a step and repeat backdrop, where you see the logos are kind of multiplied like you would see on like a red carpet.
Yeah, sure.
And we did a backdrop like that to take photos in front of.
Mm-hmm, that's a cool idea. Well, as far as back of the room sales, what types of things actually do you offer?
We offer T-shirts, magic kits, headshots, DVDs, instructional DVD.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about the headshots is that there's two of us, so we can sell three headshots.
It's not a bad idea,
yeah.
Well, let me ask you then about tickets as well, because I think that's an important part of it, that if someone is going to be putting together something like this, that there are different ways of handling that. When you're working with a theater, then they do have, of course, the box office where they can sell some walk-in tickets and everything and then like that too, and maybe even provide some usher services. But there are companies like Brown Paper Tickets or whatever it is, and as opposed to Ticketmaster, different things that are available out there where they can purchase tickets, but then you pay them a certain amount per ticket or something. So how do you go about selling tickets?
It varies. Sometimes the theaters want to handle the tickets.
Yeah.
Actually, the theaters mostly want to handle the tickets, now that I think about it. But there's a few of them where we did the tickets, and we use Brown Paper Tickets, and I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great. It's fairly easy to use, and if there's any issues with it, you can call them or email them, and they respond back pretty quickly.
Very quick.
I don't have a lot of experience, really, with other ticketing companies, but Brown Paper Tickets I really like.
That's brownpapertickets.com, I think, isn't that right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. I've heard of other people who have told us about this. Ben Jackson here in Houston has had a few shows of his own, and he has recommended that using that service then as well. But, yeah, I'm sure that some companies or rather some theaters want to use that, you know, whatever ticket service, of course, they have, and that's all well and good. But I'm just thinking that when someone is going to be putting this together, they need to be thinking about all those minor details, as well as when you said you like two-for-one types of things, you could have a obviously a price for an adult, perhaps seniors, children, you know, different ways, maybe a matinee versus evening. So do you have ticket prices all split out or one price for all, or what are you normally?
What we did, we found that some of the theaters had suggestions on this. We did a one straight price.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two or three theaters that said, hey, we like to offer a special price to our subscription service, you know, people that
sure.
subscribe to the run of shows. We'd like to give them a cheaper price. A couple of them said, you know, we offer a student ticket to all of our shows, so can we do a student senior discount? But we decided that we were going to run a straight $15 across the board, regardless if it was student or adult. And then in some cases, we've done like a free child's ticket with purchase of an adult. If it was a larger theater and there was enough seats to justify offering a free ticket. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer. I think it really depends on your market. This show, while it's family friendly and there's certainly nothing in it that is inappropriate for a child of any age, we didn't really market it as a kid's show. Mm-hmm. And so kind of the subconscious level was to just offer one ticket price. But again, I think each market and each show is going to demand a different option for that. And you really need to view, all sides of it to decide which route to go. Nowadays, to go to a movie on a Saturday night, you're going to spend $12 to $15, whether they're 8 years old or they're 48 years old. And that was kind of the approach that we took with the show, was to try to put it in a price point where, it wouldn't be a whole lot different than taking a family to the movie.
And when you are putting the show together, did you design this to go straight through without any interval, or do you have an intermission and then come back?
Oh, there's an intermission.
Okay.
It's a show in 2X.
Yeah. See, that's if you can, you want to do an intermission for the theater's sake, because they can sell alcohol mm-hmm. for 15 minutes.
Right.
Or concessions.
Concessions, yeah. Or whatever they want.
Some of them don't. But that's a big thing for the theater when you're doing a split door, is that ability to do concession sales in the middle of the show.
But it's actually a point I wanted to make a little earlier, too, because I know there's some people that are going to be listening to this and they're like, well, I can't use Photoshop, or I don't have a trailer, or I can't, or they don't have these, or they don't have lights like Chris happened to have. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of a phrase. Basically what we did was we made it as easy on the theater as possible. And that made us seem more appealing, along with the actual package of the show. But it also allowed us to give us wiggle room with negotiating.
Sure.
So, whatever sort of advantages you have, whatever you're good at, whatever you can or cannot provide for the theater, offer it.
And when it comes to that, desktop publishing side of things and creating those promotional pieces, there is a lot of great resources online. Things like Fiverr. It's amazing what you can get somebody online somewhere in the world to do for you for $5.
Yeah, Fiverr.com is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether it's a voiceover or it's editing a piece of music or creating a logo or a poster and there are other sites. I don't know off the top of my head what they are, but I know there are several sites out there where you can get a poster designed and not spend an arm and a leg with it. Probably the biggest thing, if you're going to design your own promotional materials, is before you commit to it, print out one copy and take it around to some good friends. Not these friends that'll tell you what you want to hear. Oh, it was a great show, or oh, I just love it, when you turn your back and they go, oh man, that thing looked like crap. Take it to some people that you truly, truly trust that will give you good constructive criticism. And, I'm a firm believer that where there's a will, there's a way. If you need to put a poster together and you get your ideas on paper and you ask enough people who you trust their opinion and you take that opinion, by the time you're done, you'll have a very presentable flyer or a very presentable business card or a well worked out logo. But there are a lot of people that just say, oh, I can't do that. I'm not good at that kind of stuff.
I recall the story about Chung Ling Su having gone to some schools and having competitions to see who would design the best poster, which is why that he had so many different beautiful designs and everything. So,
yeah.
And I've done that myself. I've gone to an arts institute here in Houston and had posted something just on the board saying that I'm looking for someone to draw a picture of a wizard and, for an idea. And so I think that you can find some students who will design some very good posters at very reasonable prices.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. If you're truly committed to doing a show like this, if you're not getting booked and you feel you're good enough to go out and put your own show on, you can never take an I can't attitude. You've got to find a way to get what you need. Whether that's, lights, or it's a piece of equipment, or, there are people out there. Call a DJ. There are tons of DJs out there that have great equipment that would be happy to come out for very little money and set up a piece of sound equipment if that's what you needed, or some lights if that's what you needed. It might cost you $50 or $100, But there are people out there that have that equipment sitting in their garage, and you don't get what you don't ask for.
And never don't forget about bartering. Yeah. If you have tickets to sell to a show, you can barter with people.
We've yet to pay for dinner at a town. We've been able to find some restaurant, primarily pizza places. I think we've had pizza. Well, in Asheville, we had pizza every night we had a show. but you can find restaurants that'll be willing to trade out a couple of tickets and a mention on stage for food for your staff.
Well, that was what I was going to get to as far as the posters go when I asked about a co-op a little bit earlier, that if the theater would co-op with you so that way that it wasn't all out of your own pocket, but also if you were to solicit something like, let's say, a pizza parlor or, you know, some local business that's going to be in that area and say, hey, that your name will be prominently displayed on this poster then as well or on these rack cards that you're going to be putting out, that they could offset the cost of that.
Yeah.
Luckily for us, we were in a good position to not have to do that. We were able to produce those things at very minimal cost. Mm-hmm. I have in my office with my full-time job, I have access to full-color laser printers and copiers and things where I was able to run those posters at very minimal cost. We did stumble across a website, and I don't even remember the name of it. We did a Google search for online full color printing, and we found a website. We needed, I think we were going to run 1,200 posters, and I think we found a website to do 11 by 17 full color posters, and I think we're going to end up running 21 cents a piece. So again, you know, Google is an amazing thing. If there's something you need to do for a show or for an event, doing Google searches. I just one afternoon I was like, God, I wonder if we could get a printer online. Got Print doesn't do
posters.
Small runs that are customized. They charge you a lot for those. That's like the rack cards. You know, we ran 10,000 and we customized them ourselves and did it for I think $260. If we were to run 500 for each event, we would have spent $150 per event to do a different rack card for each event. Instead of doing that, we ran those rack cards with you know, a blank spot on the bottom that we were able to customize. And that could have been going and getting a rubber stamp made. Or in my case, I had an inkjet printer that was perfect to run them through. And I think we customized all of them for maybe two ink cartridges at $20 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just got to get creative with it and find a way to an end of what you feel you need to be successful.
We mentioned Google, and we were talking about email address lists that some of the theaters would have, but how important is social media to promoting your events?
I think it's really important. I think things like blogging, for example, are you have to be able to be found online. When somebody types your name or types magician, whatever town you're in, you want to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And is with the Facebook pages, now we're still a relatively new show, so we're still working on a lot of that. We're doing the blogging and all that. But I found that the Facebook page, I'm trying to think of, how I approached the Facebook page was to get material after the shows to make it look like it's fun, so that other people want to come also, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I post on the pages regularly. You know, we're going to be in this town. Here's the tickets. But I'm also taking pictures during the shows. I'm taking pictures during the setup and all that, so that when the show is over, I can post all of these pictures and, you know, make a little comment and make it, you know, make it look like it's everybody's having a great time, which mm-hmm. they are.
Sure.
And it's incredibly important because we've had we've had actually a lot of success with that. We've had probably three or four people got active in our social media. So now when we, you know, put up the date for our next show, it gets shared with other people.
That's what you need.
When they saw it.
Right.
You know, but you got to interact. You got to put pictures up that are relevant to the show. I think it's incredibly important. It's going to get more important as the years go on.
Do you promote that during the show? I mean, I know some magicians will say,
yeah,
be sure and follow me on Facebook during the course of the show. You know,
I've actually gotten pretty bold with it. I go out during I have a little speech near the end of the show, and I tell the audience, you know, who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it. And I tell them, if you really like the show and you've enjoyed it, you can help us out by doing this one favor, and that's to pull out your cell phone And I tell them, you know, pull out your phone right now, hook up to 3G, look us up on Facebook and on Twitter. And I have them do it right there in the theater. I just ask them to do it.
And we actually went as far, we use a projection in our show, and we've created slides with the logo they'll find on Facebook and the Twitter handle and the Facebook handle. So they actually see that as Eric is doing that speech. It's actually projected on the curtain on the back of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So he can turn and say, the logo looks just like this. You'll find us at this Twitter handle, and those are coming up on the screen. And at the beginning of the show, we actually, during the curtain speech that the theater usually does, or we do ourselves, depending on the situation, we actually tell them, you can take pictures. Please take pictures of the show.
Yeah.
Don't use your flash. Don't videotape, but please take pictures. And that's been very successful for us. We've gotten a lot of pictures shared and put online that were taken by the guests of the show, people that have come to the show and seen it and then turned around, followed us on Facebook and posted those photos that they took.
Because if you think about it, if your daughter goes on stage with the magician and something fun happens, you can take some pictures of it, and then, you know, why not share it with your friends?
Sure, that's going to appear on their page. Yeah. A good idea, I think, further, you mentioned that you have that backdrop with the Impossibilities logo and whatever back there, so that if you have people who are wanting to take pictures with you and that's in the background then as well, it'd be a perfect place to say, you know, that if you enjoy the show, we'd like to do just a short video with you if you'd like to provide a testimonial. So that way people be thinking about it, I guess, beforehand. You know, I found that when people come to me after a show and say, hey, that was great, I really enjoyed the show, and I said, would you mind, with my phone right there, I don't want you to restate what you just said. And then usually it doesn't seem quite as spur of the moment. They say, yeah, sure, you have to think about it. But if you tell them in advance saying, you know, we would like to post a testimonial, your testimonial, if you just want to meet us back over here, we'll be glad to take a picture. And also, if you got a few moments to do a video with us, just saying a few words about what you thought about the show. So that way it gives them time to prepare.
Yeah, that's something we haven't done, but that's a fantastic idea.
Because we have, or I have in the past, done the video testimonials, and I know what you're talking about. You do have that, they're sort of on the spot reaction to it. But yeah, giving them a few moments to, you know,
and if it's towards the end of the show, just as you were saying, whenever you're saying, you know, go to Facebook, et cetera, then it's the last thing on their mind they're going to be having, because the show's going to be over in a few more minutes, that they will start to formulate something in their mind when they walk out. They'll see that that place where they can stand and a red carpet or whatever, and then they're going to say, oh, yeah, I want to line up and say, great show or whatever. Well, I'll tell you what, as we start to wrap up over here, I do want to get your Twitter handle and, of course, your Facebook page and the email where people can write you if they have some specific questions about how they can put together their own show and your website. So lay it all on me here.
All right, the Twitter, you're going to love this. We love this. The Twitter is, the handle is Best Magic Show. You believe that was available?
Best Magic Show. Wow.
Best Magic Show.
Okay.
According to Twitter, we're the Best Magic Show.
I like
we're
that.
So. That on our poster.
You know, when we set up the Twitter account for this show, we typed. I bet we sat here for an hour
trying to find some
version of Impossibilities in Twitter that would work.
Right.
Nothing. And I just jokingly typed in Best Magic Show, and here comes this big green check mark.
Wow.
And I looked at Eric, and Eric looked at me. I was like, there's no way. That and I'm like, yeah, I spelt it right. Everything's right.
Yeah, grab it. Cool.
The Facebook page is Impossibilities Show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the website is, too. It's www.impossibilityshow.com. And you can also find me via those links, too. I'm on Facebook and Twitter on separate accounts. And I believe Chris is, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. And as we start to wrap up also, since the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, what would be your individual magic words? Or since you're working together, do you have a joint word that you like to use or something that is not necessarily used in the context of the show, but perhaps it's something that's important to your life or your that means something to you? It could be a phrase. It could doesn't have to be just
my magic word be Geronimo?
Why not? That sounds good. I think that Bizarro told me his was Snap Doodle or something like that.
That's a good one. I like a lot of puh.
Yeah, Geronimo.
I'll tell you, I only use one magic word in my show, and I don't create it. I let whoever's on stage, and it's a great little little bit where I ask the spectator to wiggle their fingers and say the magic word, and they'll kind of look at me. I'll go, it's your show. It can be whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard lots of them, but for me, my magic word is thank you. I'm very passionate about thanking my audience for coming out and supporting live theater and live magic. And, I think every magician, something that we miss a lot in our shows, but I think everybody should take two minutes out of their show and have the audience give themselves a big round of applause for being there, because they could have chose to do anything with their money, and they were grateful enough to come out and support you, especially in a theater show like this. Yeah. And I don't think we thank our audience enough for coming out.
Absolutely great. Those are great words. Well, thank you. Geronimo's okay. But
did we give you the email also?
No, go ahead.
Okay, that's impossibilitiesshow@gmail.com.
And those two S, by the way, back-to-back, impossibilitiesshow@gmail.com. Got it.
Did you see my magic word was just okay?
Geronimo? Well, I don't know. Yeah, okay, that's good. Better than Thunderbird, I guess.
He's a mentalist, so.
I have to think about that.
My magic word is a cocked eyebrow.
Well, listen, I have to say thank you to you guys. Thank you very much, you know, for your time over here and telling us kind of the inside and the nitty gritty about what's important in order to try to get a show actually out there and to find a market. Instead of waiting for the phone to ring, you guys have actually gone and been proactive. And I think that you're to be congratulated. And I thank you for your time and for sharing all the open secrets that you did to the community. I think that my dozens of listeners will enjoy it as well. So.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time and spending some time with us this evening. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, this has been really fun. Thank you.
Yeah, has been great. And so that was Eric Dobell and Chris Collins. And for the MagicWordPodcast.com, this is Scotty out. For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.